This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. And in the spirit of an enlightened future, TrekFan is absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and finally, back with me after a long Section 31 mission, which we will explain at the end of the show, is my esteemed co-host Matthew Rushing. Matthew, welcome back to The Orb.
Well, it's great to be back. It's also great to be back, Chris, when we are going to be talking about the final countdown of Deep Space Nine. I love that we've...
The final countdown. And of course, what I see now is Job from Arrested Development with the knife in his mouth dancing.
Yes, flailing around with scarves and all that kind of stuff. Exactly. Oh man, so funny. But no, it's great to be back for that. I love getting to do these episodes, watching it today. Just again, reminded how much I enjoy the end of Deep Space Nine and these episodes and these characters. And so it's great to be back to talk about them in a forum that I really, really enjoy.
Absolutely. And we've been getting so much great feedback about this series on not the final countdown, but the final chapter. And people are really enjoying the discussion, they say. So I'm really happy as well to be back to talk about the fifth part of the 9-episode arc, When It Rains. So let's jump straight in, Matthew. This episode is called When It Rains because, of course, in English we say, when it rains, it pours, and it's really starting to pour in this episode. There are all sorts of problems besetting our characters.
Yeah, Chris, I think this is the episode, it's a 9-part arc, and this is part 5, so it's in the middle, basically, of this whole series that they're doing, and it is setting up all the pieces, all the problems that are going to face our heroes for the final part of the arc here. So you've got something like the fact that Odo not only has the illness, but of course we find out that he's the originator of it from Section 31, and when he visited Starfleet all those years back with Paradise Lost. And
he's the originator of the disease making its way into the Great Link.
Exactly.
Not the originator as in the creator of the disease.
Well, no, exactly. Yeah, having it been introduced into him from Section 31, obviously he didn't know. So, a huge problem there, realizing that not only is Odo sick, but for him, having the realization that now he's been used, he'll find out is a huge thing. So that's crazy for our heroes to be facing.
Right. So that's one thing. I mean, that's a pretty big thing, right? That's a bad thing, but that's only one thing. And then we have the fact that the Klingons are the only ones who can go into battle at the moment because their ships are the only ones that could be modified to not be vulnerable to the Breen weapon.
Not only that, Chris, but on top of that, then crazy Gowron comes around,
right,
and decides that he needs to be the leader of their forces instead of Martok, and starts pulling some crazy bleep. So it's oh my gosh. So that's right. That's another problem that happens.
Well, and of course, in this episode, he starts to set up the craziness. We don't get to see it yet, although we do get to see him acting crazy. This was the first time in 2 years that Robert O'Reilly had played Gowron. But when he comes out of that airlock, he's got the crazy eye going. He's got the crazy laugh going. He's like your jolly, crazy uncle at the family reunion.
Yeah, the one that you know has been drinking just a little bit too much and you keep away from all the teenage girls. Yep, that's him.
Right. Exactly. Keep Gowron out of court.
Exactly. And then, Chris, of course, not only that, but we also run into the issue that Damar's forces have no idea how to run a guerrilla warfare. They are trained soldiers. He's a by-the-book guy. We have that whole issue, you know, Kira being sent to them. Are they going to accept him? The whole mixture in there with Garrick as well. I mean, that alone is another huge, just it's like carrying around sticks of dynamite at that point for the story.
Well, and when we talk about when it rains and the problems coming down, what sets that up, of course, is that half of Damar's troops were killed in the attack on Rondak. So his whole insurgency is really on the verge of collapsing. So that's a huge problem. And then, I don't know if this is exactly a problem, but it's an interesting topic that we will talk about here. And it's actually the first thing I want to talk about is Major Kira, Colonel Kira, I should say. She's a colonel at this point, who is then going to become Commander Kira as she gets her Starfleet threads, which look really nice.
Oh, yeah. Love the Starfleet threads on Nana.
And they send her off to Cardassia. So you've got this woman who spent her whole life fighting against the Cardassians to free her world of them. Now she has to go and fight with them to free their world from the Dominion, and she has to work with the man who killed the girl who she really considered a member of her family, Zeal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the very definition of irony, you know, here in this storyline. But it also, I think, is the definition of great character arc, because you've had Kira who's come through the trenches as a child, being a terrorist, as the Cardassians would call her, a freedom fighter, as the Bajorans would call her, who knows what anybody in the Federation might call her, just because they try not to take sides. She's somebody who's then also been fighting for the freedom of her people now that the Cardassians have been gone, learning to work with Starfleet. Somebody that she didn't even like at the beginning of the show has learned to come and respect Starfleet and the Federation. And now, the very last straw, you know, being asked to go in, teach Cardassians how to be their own freedom fighters. Basically to teach them to do what she did so many years ago against them. And like you said, do it with a man who she is just, I don't even know if she hates him. You know, I don't know if that's strong enough, because I think hate's kind of trite in some ways. Like the feelings that she has towards him are so strong, and yet she's willing to put all of that aside and look at the bigger picture, which beforehand, you know, say first, second, third season Kira would never be able to do. So she's come so far. And then on that flip side, you have somebody like Damar, who has been completely broken down and has become so malleable that he can allow a Bajoran to teach him how to do something that he realizes he does not have any idea how to do. And the humility with which he portrays himself with her, I thought was really interesting. And watching the episode again, you know, he kind of quickly makes the decision, no, we're not going to attack any base that has Cardassians. And then the minute she explains exactly why that's a terrible idea, he immediately changes.
Yeah.
The real humility and wisdom that he shows, I think, again, is some incredible writing. And for a character, I mean, how many episodes is Damar even on, Chris? I mean, what? Probably maybe 15 at the most, probably 20.
Yeah, that's pretty close. He's actually on 23 episodes.
Okay.
So, yeah. You're right in the ballpark there.
So that's an incredible character arc for, you know, 72 yeah. hours of television here.
73.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So incredible that you have that many hours, but only 23 of them have probably maybe 10, 15 minutes devoted to this character each.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So what an amazing run.
That's an interesting point, too, because one of the reasons for sending Kira and Odo there, and Garrick as well, is that you feel like Damar is there more often, especially late in the series, even though it's only 23 episodes. And, of course, he started to become, especially towards the end of the sixth season, maybe, but especially in the seventh season, becomes popular with a lot of fans, but he's not a regular, and they felt that in order to tell the story of his resistance to the Dominion, they needed to have some of our main characters there taking part in it, so that when they cut to those elements, it's just not supporting characters only for those parts, because that might not really engage the audience as much. So originally, they weren't going to have Kira being in there all the time. They were going to have Kira and Odo off looking for a cure to the disease. But instead, they felt, well, we need Kira to be there, which I think makes perfect sense. And honestly, if Kira weren't here, not only would it be less interesting to me as a viewer, but I think the Damar element, like you're just talking about, and his humility and working with her, that character wouldn't work either if he weren't paired up with Kira.
Well, and it really doesn't make sense, too, that Damar, for the character that we've seen for all these years, is not a character who would understand this kind of warfare. You know, he is a soldier. He is somebody, I mean, think about it in this terms. He is the British marching in a red coat, being attacked by, you know, American patriots, you know, shooting them from the bushes. You know, he just has no idea how to be that other side.
And, right. And he would continue to do the same thing, knowing it doesn't work, because what else am I supposed to do?
Right. And so I think that it makes for just such a compelling storyline. And then, of course, honestly, you know, placing Odo there with the disease that he has, and the fact that he is going to be hiding this from Kira from now on, and they're going to be playing this cat and mouse game, adds another great element to this. And, you know, I think, too, just watching again, Odo realizing that somehow he is most likely the reason which the rest of his people are dying.
Yeah.
You know, he knows that it obviously didn't come from him, but he's probably the reason that it got passed on to them.
Right.
So that's a really, what a weight to carry around.
Having him there is important too, because I was talking to someone on Twitter yesterday who really doesn't like the last two seasons of DS9 very much. And they said they don't mind the arcs, but they hate the fact that the show is about a war, that it's very un-Trek. But what I pointed out in contrast to that is that there is a war taking place, but the stories aren't about the war. The stories are about the characters and how the war impacts the characters. And when you put Kira in this situation where she's having to deal with Damar, she's having to help her enemy gain their freedom. But then when you put Odo there as well, and she's having to do all this with the knowledge that her lover is dying at the same time, really makes it all on a small level. It's all about the characters on that level, even though this war is going on around them. The stories aren't really so much about the war itself.
Well, and again, I really don't see this, you know, Star Trek, especially, you know, you look throughout, the films, the background for the original series. There had, you know, been a huge war with the Romulans and all these kind of things. Like, it's in the background. These things have happened, and or the antagonism with the Klingons all throughout the original series, and the Romulans still all the way through TNG. And, you know, war is everywhere. Even Miles O'Brien and his, you know, when we learn about him, we find out he's been at war with the Cardassians before.
Right.
And so, Sisko, we learn, the Zenkathy, all of these people have been in wars throughout the existence of the Federation. It's just the way it goes, you know? And so living in the reality of the 24th century doesn't mean that it's a utopia. That utopia is being buttressed by people that don't like it, and therefore you have to defend that.
What would be un-Trek would be if there were a civil war on Earth. That would be there something you wouldn't see in Gene Roddenberry's vision. I think when people say that this war story that we're talking about here in Deep Space Nine is un-Trek, it's not un-Trek. Actually, if anything, it brought together the Federation and the Klingons and the Romulans. In this episode, the Federation says they have shared all their intelligence about the Breen weapon with the Romulans.
And the Klingons at the same time.
But at least with the Klingons, like the Federation and the Klingons have kind of been uneasy allies for the past century or whatever. But the Romulans are still very much the enemy, and yet we're giving them all of our military intelligence. So it's actually brought everyone together and unified them to fight off this other threat from an external source that threatens the utopia and threatens the way of life.
This is true, Chris. But the
war on Earth, a civil war on Earth, that would be un-Trek.
Of course, the counter argument to that is the Romulans wouldn't be in the war without something very un-Trek. Sure. But that's a whole different story. We've talked at length about that issue.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that before.
But yeah, I mean, even in this episode, in the war room, you see Sisko standing there. He's talking to Miles O'Brien, who's explaining the situation. But he's standing there with the representative there for the Romulans, as well as the Klingons. They're all in the same room, and they're working together. And yes, the Romulan makes a quip about the Klingons being their last line of defense, and, you know, ha, ha, ha. But still,
yeah, he's like, what have we come to, right?
But still, at the same time, the fact that they're all in that room having a civil conversation, all working towards the same goal, I'm not sure what is more Trek than that.
Right. It's bringing people together to put their differences aside.
And it's what we see throughout this. And again, it's what we're seeing here with this mission with Kira. What's more Trek than seeing two people who used to be the worst enemies you could think of now working side by side towards a common goal? And as we'll work through, Kira will come to respect Damar, and I think even have a fondness for him she never thought possible. And again, there's nothing more Trek.
Well, and she mirrors us as viewers in that sense as well, because I think most of us come to respect Damar by the end, and we hated him going into this.
Oh gosh, yes.
After he killed Z'all. Here's one more question for you, Matthew, while we're on this topic. Did you find it a little bit odd that the Cardassian military would not understand how to fight this type of battle, given that they fought against the Bajorans for so long? Because Kira starts to explain how you need to separate your groups into semi-autonomous cells so that no one can compromise anyone else, and you have to scatter your people. You can't have this massive front going on. And then Garrick says that's how the Obsidian Order worked as well. It seems like knowing that the Obsidian Order worked that way, and that after the Obsidian Order ceased to exist, the people that were part of it must have moved on to something else. It's like you see in Russia today, you've got the president of Russia who was KGB, right? And now he's in charge. These people, they don't all die. They come back out somewhere else. And it just seemed a little bit unusual to me that someone high up like Damar would have like no clue whatsoever that they would need to have a different military tactic and something like that.
You know, Chris, it does make a little bit of sense, though, that the base military would have an aversion to this, because it goes to that Cardassian arrogance that we see with the rest of the soldiers there. And the only people that are kind of move beyond that are Dumar and Garrick and, the quote-unquote kind of more enlightened Cardassians at this point, the ones who aren't so high and mighty on themselves and their people. So I think that's really kind of what they're pushing at this episode, is the kind of dichotomy between this kind of new Cardassia and the old Cardassia.
Matthew, are you trying to tell me that Gol Rusait is not enlightened?
That is exactly what I'm saying. One, because he didn't realize that Kira could kick his ass six ways to Sunday.
I love that when Garrick tells him, "You're lucky. She would have killed you."
Yes. And he's like, "Huh, I wish she would have tried." And then, of course, later we know.
No, you don't.
Yeah, no, you don't. Uh-uh. So.
Okay, so we've talked about Kira a good bit here. We've talked about Dumar. What did you think about Garrick's role in this? He seems absolutely giddy when he's standing in Sisko's office and they're talking about going on this mission. Like, he cannot wait. I don't know if it's because he wants to return home to Cardassia. I don't know if he thinks it's because he can somehow screw over Dumar, or if it's just him being put back in his element. Like, if you put Worf into a battle and the Klingon comes out, this is Garrick who loves the espionage, who loves the spy game, being put into the middle of something like that.
You know, Chris, I really think what it was for him is not only being excited to go home, but realizing that he may be able to impact the future of Cardassia. Mm-hmm. You know, Garrick has such a love for his people and his homeland. I think he sees this as an opportunity to be able to get back in, and not in the way that, you know, Dukat kind of, you know, craves power, but I think Garrick really wants to change Cardassia for the better at this point. I think that's one of the things he's really excited about, but I honestly think the biggest thing is he's just ready to go home. You know, it's been so long since he's been home. And, you know, for somebody like him, this is going to be heaven, even though it's in the worst of circumstances.
Well, it's an opportunity for him, right? He's in exile. He wants to go home, but he doesn't necessarily want to go home to Dukat's Cardassia that we see through much of the series. This is an opportunity for him, like you said, to go and make a difference, so that when they come out of the other side of that tunnel back into the light, the Cardassia will be different than the one that he was exiled from. Because living with other people, I started to say living with humans, but living with the Federation and even Quark and all the different people who passed through the station really changed him. You know, he's not that Cardassian who was in the Obsidian Order in the past. It's just like any of us. Like me, you know, I grew up in America, but I'm very different now because I've lived in different places around the world. I've lived in Japan now for 18 years, and it changes you. You become more accustomed to more diversity, and that's what I see in Garrick with his time on the station, now going back to Cardassia.
Well, and I think that that's such a neat thing that not only Chris, that he's been influenced like the Federation and Quark and all those people, but I think he's been influenced by his interaction with the Bajorans as well. You know, with somebody like Kira, who kind of begrudgingly has not befriended Garrick, but has a respect for him, especially after his interactions with Zial. I think that really softened her to him. I think that's had a huge impact as well on him. And the error of the Cardassian way really plays out. And I think that's what we pick up later on and when we see in the novels. And now, of course, all of Cardassia is being led by Garrick. And so I think it's an awesome thing to see him at this point just getting to go home to do what he can to free his people and hopefully make a better Cardassia. In the same way, I think that at this point, Damar really wants a better Cardassia and is looking for it. And those two are, you know, like we said, that's the new Cardassia. That's what it's going to be like.
Well, let's move on to another topic, which is still related to what we've been talking about in a sense, because we talked about Odo being there in the caves and he realizes that he really is infected. And you see his skin, you see the skin on his hand start peeling. And at this point he can fix it, but he's having to hide this illness from Kira. And back on the station, Julian starts to uncover the mystery of what's going on. And we find out something very frightening, which I think may be more un-Trek than the whole war story that people get upset about. And this is the idea that Starfleet created this virus and is actually waging genocide in slow motion, I guess you would say, against another race. And what I find really troubling about it, there are a couple of things. Now, first of all, you could say, well, it's Section 31 doing it. But then you have to wonder, who's in Section 31 and how far have they infiltrated Starfleet Medical? Because when Bashir calls Starfleet Medical, he talks to Commander Hilliard, who's a real jerk, by the way. And the people at Starfleet Medical, they know about it. Like, there are people there who know about it. This has been classified. And he's asked by someone at Starfleet Medical, why would you want to find a cure for the disease? It's affecting our enemy. Now, if you look at other doctors in Starfleet, you look at Beverly, you look at Bashir himself, pretty much I think any doctor in Starfleet would want to find a cure for that disease because it is causing pain to a living being of some form. It wouldn't matter if that person's the enemy or not the enemy. So this is like Starfleet Medical itself being aware that this disease was created by them or someone within Starfleet, being introduced to an alien population and it's killing them, and they are putting up walls to make sure that a cure cannot be found.
I took it a little bit differently, Chris. I didn't see, you know, Hilliard or any of those people being involved in the actual plot. What I saw them being more is what Miles had said. You know, guys like this, you know, they're not used to being on the front lines. They're used to being a paper pusher, and Starfleet headquarters has just been attacked by the Breen. And so that kind of mentality definitely can come about when you have something like that happen completely unexpected, when you think you're safe. A whole new thought process can go through your head. And, you know, those guys didn't seem to be doctors. They just seemed to be the administrators, obviously, working at Starfleet Medical. And so I didn't take that as this would be representation of Starfleet Medical itself. More the administration of Starfleet Medical in some areas. And so, and as we know, I mean, with Section 31, it's insidious. It really is, in the way that it's able to get in to certain places and just the right people to make something like this happen. So, that is a really scary thought. And I think, you know, it plays out well in a few episodes with, Bashir and O'Brien and their mission with Section 31. But this is one of the scariest parts, I think, of the series. But I think it's as relevant today as it was before. And I think it's needed in Star Trek because, honestly, it speaks to the fact that nothing can be a complete utopia because we're all imperfect beings, you know? And so there's just no way for that to happen. The reality is that can't happen. And I, seeing this kind of battle, back and forth, you know, with somebody like Julian and O'Brien, who are kind of very black and white against this very, very, very gray type of organization like Section 31, it's a very interesting ideological battle.
Yeah. I talked to someone else the other day, and they were also saying they don't like these types of shades of gray in Deep Space Nine because they prefer just the optimistic utopian future of, say, the next generation, because that's what they strive for. And I think it's great that you strive for that. But I think like what you're saying here is important to have this in Star Trek, is that there is an insidious element that will undermine the utopia. And if you hide from it and you act like it can exist, then you can't protect yourself from it. And so if we were to pull out Section 31, remove it from Star Trek, which some fans would like us to do because they say it's not Gene Roddenberry's ideals, then we wouldn't be able to explore that facet of society and government. And then when something like that came up in the future, we're not going to be on guard for it because we just pretend like it can't happen. But of course, it can and it always will. I think no matter how far we go in the future, there will be some organization like that, or at least people like that within the government.
And I think that's just a naive point of view. You might not like it, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know, I don't like dandruff. I don't like pimples. Yeah. I don't like, you know, all these kind of things. But that doesn't mean they don't actually exist. So you know what? If I don't wash my face and I don't eat certain away, I might, you know, still break out into pimples. So, well, you know what I'm saying? It's just a silly thing to say.
Well, but in defense of those people, I don't think they're saying that that doesn't exist right now. I mean, they're not being naive and saying that doesn't exist. I think they're being idealistic that it won't exist in the future because we've created the utopia that Gene Roddenberry envisioned. But my point of view is that even once you create that utopia, it will still exist. It's just the nature of people. It's going to happen. Here's one more thing before we move off of this topic, though, about Section 31 creating this morphogenic virus and infecting Odo. Bashir finds out in this episode that he was infected when he visited Starfleet Command during Homefront and Paradise Lost. Now, at that point in time, there was the changeling scare, right? We knew who the Dominion were, but we weren't really at war yet. It wasn't this full-blown Dominion war that's going on now. It was sort of like, here's something scary that could be a threat, but they haven't really done much to us yet. Now, they did bomb. There was the bomb, of course, in that is what spurred them to bring Sisko there in Homefront. And yeah, that's scary. But you don't create a morphogenic virus that targets a specific life form overnight. It takes time to do that. So it seems to me that Section 31 had been developing this virus, and they also lured Odo there so that they could put it into him so he could take it back. So at some point, when Section 31 is just seeing the Dominion and the Changelings as a potential threat to Federation security, they're going to the extreme step of creating a virus that will actually kill this entire race to prevent them. It's what the Zindi are doing on Enterprise when they want to destroy Earth before Earth has done anything to them, just because hundreds of years in the future, Earth may destroy Zindis.
Yeah, I definitely think this has played out a lot in Star Trek. And you could see, you know, Section 31, you know, when Bashir has talked to Sloan before, the idea that they kind of see the future, and they're looking, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years into the future to see how things, the meta story is going to play out. And so I feel like, to me, the impetus for this must have been most likely when the Romulans and the Cardassians are destroyed. Mm. That whole fleet is destroyed by the changelings. I think
that's a good point.
At that point, you know, Section 31 really probably kicked it into high gear and was like, okay, we got to find a way to take care of these guys, because this is just, if they can do that, just think of the threat that they're going to be. And then, of course, you know, in Homefront and in Paradise Lost, you do have a legitimate threat from the changelings. There is one on Earth. He is running things.
So. Yeah. But in that sense, I think creating a morphogenic virus to kill all the changelings is sort of an extreme step.
Definitely. Right? That, not arguing that that's correct.
But what you say here is something I hadn't thought about, and that makes perfect sense. That yes, when the Romulan Cardassian fleets were wiped out, Section 31 would have looked at that and said, wow, these guys could be trouble.
Well, yeah, not only trouble, but I think they realized that the timetable that they even thought that the founders were working off of might have been bumped up because
right. They
thought, okay, well, we can take out the Cardassians, the Romulans pretty quickly. Goodness, it shouldn't be that hard to take everybody out in the Alpha Quadrant.
Right. And to tie this into learning from history or learning from past mistakes, you could also argue that they looked back when Picard decided not to send the destructive algorithm back with Hugh into the Borg collective to destroy the Borg, and then what happened as a result of that, and what the fight that they had against the Borg after that as well, and also the fact that the Borg's timetable got stepped up as well. So they could be looking at that and saying, hey, we made this mistake once. We've been down this road. We're going to just nip this in the bud right now if we can.
Well, yeah, that's a
doesn't
that's
make
a
it right.
No, that's
genocide.
A great thought. No,
but that could have been the thought process.
Well, and of course, too, when you bring the Borg into it, that's a whole other discussion. I mean,
right?
Is it really all that bad to destroy all the Borg? You know, obviously, David Mack thinks of a much better solution to that. So we'll leave that to him and Destiny.
Yeah. While we're on the topic of Bashir investigating this here, I did want to ask you quickly, Matthew, what you think about the editing of the episode. They reversed a few scenes here. So we have this big scene with the Klingon ceremony and your crazy Uncle Gowron, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. And then we have Bashir calling Starfleet Medical. And we also have the scene of Bashir and Miles in the Replimat, where Julian tells Miles what happened when he talked to Starfleet. Those were actually reversed. In the script, we actually, right after we have Dukat and Wynn with their little thing, we go right into Bashir's conversation. And instead, we reestablish the station and we go into the Klingon ceremony. And then after that, we get Bashir's discovery and we get the bit with Miles. And then we go back over to the runabout entering orbit. For me, it worked a little bit better there, I think, because of the discussion with the Klingons and the Romulans and all at the beginning of the episode and the talk of the Romulan ships, and then Gowron shows up. And then this connection between Bashir finding out what's really going on and what's happening to Odo in the caves, having those fit more closely together. I think the editing made the episode flow better for me.
Yeah, I think probably that's one of those things where you can write something and it looks good on paper, and then when you kind of start putting it together, the physicality of how it's all working together and how it's all flowing makes more sense, you know, if you kind of reorder it. And I think it does work really well. You know, I noticed that Michael Dorn directed this episode.
Yeah.
And so I think he does
a great... So not much Worf in here.
Not much Worf, but I think he does a great job of creating a good sense of flow throughout this episode and really having all these pieces kind of work together. And it seemed just like clockwork. I mean, all the little cogs are turning at the right time. And I felt like, you know, the cuts and the way that the story was put together, because this really is a very much a middle part of the story. But it still felt really interesting. And there's a lot of great character moments in here, too. I mean, you're just talking about Miles and Julian being together in those scenes. Those two guys working together to figure it out, and then Court coming in and having a little scene with them. You know, just perfect character scenes to really add those layers to what could be a boring middle part of the story, and yet is priceless because of everything that's going on and the things they're doing character-wise.
Now, as you're talking, about three different things just popped in my head at the same time. So I don't know what order I'll say them in here. I guess with Miles and Jules in that scene, going back earlier when I said that originally they were going to have Kira and Odo go off and look for a cure for this virus, but then they decided, no, we need to keep Kira with Damar, and then we shouldn't split up Odo and Kira. So they had O'Brien and Bashir go off and find the virus instead, the cure for the virus instead. That seems like the no-brainer to me. I can't imagine that not happening because of their bromance, A, and their just the connection with Section 31 and all. They are the perfect two people to go off and mess with Sloan and follow through on that story.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, at that point, you need the buddy cops to go and figure this out. I mean, you need Murtaugh and Riggs to be the ones going to do this. You can't, it doesn't make any sense. And of course, obviously, just the righteousness that comes off of Bashir when he's dealing with these kind of situations, you need that.
Yeah.
And there's no better foil for him than Section 31. And because he's kind of like, you know, we talked about this with Jeff Lang on Literary Treks, with Data kind of being a superhero. Well, Bashir is kind of the superhero for, you know, Deep Space Nine in the end, the things that he can do. And so his kryptonite really is thirst for knowledge and also his love of justice and just kind of that very black and white kind of, you know, I feel like he's like Captain America basically without the shield.
Right. And of course his belief that he's invincible.
Yeah, pretty exactly.
The second of those three things was, you mentioned this being a middle story. One thing I love about this episode is they don't waste a second of time. As soon as this episode starts, you're right into the discussion about what happened in the last episode with the Breen weapon. There's no last time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. There's no recapping of anything. It's like, if you didn't see the last episode and you start this one, you're going to be going, Breen weapon, huh? What's going on here?
Yeah, I think it's great. The fact that, you know, they expect you to have seen last week's episode and jump right in. It works really well. And I think what's great for these days, you know, when you're watching Netflix, it works great for the syndication factor of that. Yeah. You know, just going straight to the next episode, it just makes it flow perfectly. It makes me wish the Clone Wars, they did a few episodes where they would stitch them together. So it was actually, they would kind of change some of the shots and everything so that everything worked together like a film instead of, you know, three different episodes. I kind of wish they would kind of do that with this last arc and just stitch it all together in one massive movie.
That's for the Blu-ray release.
Yeah, Matthew. There you go.
That's going to be awesome. That's going to be like the 4-disc set that you just play continuously.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. You know, 9 and 10 hours of Deep Space Nine.
I want to create a new kind of Blu-ray player for this. It's, you know, when we had Laserdisc players, we had the single layer, then we had the double-sided Laserdisc player where it could play the other side without you having to take the disc out and flip it over. This is going to be like a quad-sided Blu-ray player. It's a cube that you slide in and it can just read all four sides.
I love that, a quad-sided Blu-ray player. All I'm picturing is a Sony Dreamcast, but basically that plays Blu-rays.
Right. All right. The third thing here is that we mentioned that there's not much Worf in this episode because Michael Dorn is directing. Well, if that's a problem of having someone be in the episode and direct, maybe there was someone else on the set who could have directed this episode because they weren't in this episode at all.
Oh, Jake Sisko?
Yeah, Cirroc Lofton is not in this episode.
So they should have gotten Cirroc Lofton to direct.
As we say here on the Orb, Cirroc Lofton does not appear in this episode. No, we love Cirroc. He's just not in
That's true. He is definitely not in this episode.
He's just not there all the time. So, all right, well, let's move on. We've got a couple of other items to touch on here before we wrap up. We talked a bit about Gowron coming in here, Gowron the Crazy. And what was your take on the way that he is approaching Martok and the way that Martok's men react? Because, I mean, obviously, he's giving Martok this honor to get him out of the way so that he can step in and take over. But it's very disrespectful to someone. It's like a disguised disrespect, right? I'm honoring you to get you out of the way because I don't like the way you're approaching the war. I want to charge in. We're going to be the heroes. And Gowron has decided that somehow the Klingons are going to win the war and save the day, and they're going to get all the credit for this.
You know what I just thought of is it's sleazy.
Like sleazy.
Yeah, he really is.
Well, that plays into your crazy Uncle Gowron.
Yeah,
bit, right?
You know, he's just, he's a petty, jealous guy who has, you know, dictatorial leanings, and he wants to be, in some ways, he's a little Dukatish. He's so full of himself, he wants to be the leader, and he's been content to sit back on Kronos and get fat and drink blood wine and quote unquote lead the empire while other people do the fighting. And now that Martok is basically a hero, it is okay. I figured out what it is. It's biblical. He is Saul and Martok is David. And, you know, and the song is that Saul has slain his thousands and David has slain his 10,000s. And Gowron cannot stand that Martok, his song is bigger and stronger than his at this point in the empire. Mm,
yeah, and that makes sense, especially with the inspirations for this story and for this final arc.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, a few seasons in DS9, in fact, that makes sense. Yeah, but you mentioned Dukat. Gowron is a lot like Dukat in that way, but without the actual skill that Dukat has.
Right, exactly.
Dukat, I mean, we don't like what he's doing, but Dukat has real skills to try to achieve his goals. Whereas Gowron feels like that guy who, well, he became chancellor, but is he really that good at his job? Does he really have better skills than anyone else?
Yeah, Dukat has the ability, the charm and the know-how of how to get people to do what he wants. Yeah. Gowron really doesn't have that. He's not any of those things. He's not a tactician.
He's
got to
get you drunk on blood wine first.
Exactly. You know, he's just somebody who had he's born in it. You know, like he's got the royal, quote, royal blood and all that jazz.
Right, right, right.
And so that's really where he gets his power from. And whereas somebody like Dukat or even Martok, they've made themselves who they are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least when Gowron's going to get you drunk on blood wine so that you think he's more charming, he does it in style. I mean, I think that was a vintage 2309.
Well, and what a great party. I mean, it was really nice, and everybody got to cut their hand, which Klingons love, you know, slicing open their hand.
Yeah.
And as Sisko said, hey, that's what the blood wine's for, so...
I found that an interesting line, right? Does that, it just numbs the pain, I guess, like you get inebriated and you don't feel it anymore?
Well, yeah. And doesn't alcohol, though, kind of start to thin your blood? So it's really not the best thing to drink when you have a wound because it will just bleed more instead of coagulate better. So I don't really know. apparently, you know, Sisko is not really a doctor, so shouldn't probably trust his judgment. Ask
I'm
Julian,
not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV.
I don't even pretend to be one on this station. But
I tried. Julian told me to cut it out.
He was like,
he said, you might outrank me, but I'm the doctor, and I can actually tell you to go
to your quarters. Exactly. That's exactly what I can relieve you of duty, sir.
That's right. So we'll get more into Gowron in the next episode that we do here on the final chapter, because that's where things really heat up. The one last thing about this, Matthew, that I thought was interesting was that when Gowron explains his plan and Worf and Martok are telling him, like, you're crazy, like, we can't possibly do that, we can't charge in there. And Gowron says, oh, we'll get all the credit. And there's like, it seems like a momentary smile by Worf, but then immediately Worf seems like he's very troubled by this plan. But Martok, it looks like it connects with him for a minute, like one last chance at glory as a warrior, which I found interesting because just before that, Martok was the voice of reason saying, like, this is insane.
Yeah, I do think every Klingon would kind of respond to that speech. Gowron knows exactly what to say to kind of rouse that Klingon part of you that thirsts for battle and glory and honor. And yet both of those guys immediately, I think at the same time, are like, this dude is cray cray.
Right.
You know, like and I think, you know, too, as you watch through this again, if you've seen it before, you start to see the wheels turning in Worf's head. You know, Martok is not going to do anything mm-hmm. about this because he's a good soldier. But Worf, on the other hand, he's not going to put up with this crap for long because it will destroy the Empire and the entire Alpha Quadrant. And there's no way Worf's going to let that happen.
But that's a character change in Worf where we see his development during his time on Deep Space Nine, because Worf on TNG would probably, I think, have seen this as a great opportunity to reconnect with his Klingon roots and go into battle and get glory.
Well, and two, especially since at this episode, you know, Gowron has been playing nice with him, you know, saying, if Martok's made you part of your house, what's the past is the past, basically. Let bygones be bygones, you know. So
now let's go drink.
Exactly. Everything that Worf has hoped to hear, I think, except that Martok has shown him what a real Klingon is.
Right. And yeah, so, exactly.
And I think that's the big thing. That's what's really changed Worf and made him the character that I really love.
Yeah. I have to point out that scene there about him being part of the house of Martok. When they leave to go drink, did you catch Admiral Ross's belt buckle?
It was awesome. I love that scene too, because I just love that Sisko's like, huh, guess we're not invited. And the look that Ross gives him is just, those two guys, I want to see more. I want to see an entire show of just together. Sisko and Ross.
Yeah, you know? A spinoff series. Sisko
exactly.
And Ross.
It'd be great. That would be awesome. I got to say, you know, at least until the books, he was the first admiral that you really, really liked. You know,
yeah,
he was not a bad admiral.
Yeah.
He was the guy
he's
that
not
you,
a bad admiral.
Not at all. You respected him. You liked him. Even in the episode with Julian, where they go to Romulus and the whole thing there.
Oh yeah.
Even there, you know, he's still a guy. He had a lot of Sisko-ness in him, and you kind of respected him. And he wasn't. Yeah, he was an admiral that you could you know, you wanted to hang around and hoping he was going to hand you one of his belt buckles.
That's everyone's goal, right? Is to be handed a belt buckle by an admiral. That's when you know you've made it.
Here you go, buddy. It's got your name on it.
Oh, that would have been awesome if they had their names on their belt buckles.
Gosh. In rhinestones.
Oh, that would have been awesome. I think that's why they sent Admiral Ross to Deep Space Nine, though, is because he's not a badmiral, and all the other badmirals at Starfleet Command, he was like raining on their party. They had to get rid of him, so they shipped him off.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what happened.
Yeah. Okay, last thing to talk about here before we wrap up, and I don't have a whole lot to say about this really, because it's just put in here basically to, it's a stalling mechanism for Wynn and Dukat. They figured out in writing these episodes that they had started the whole story with Wynn and Dukat a little bit too early, and it had played out, and here they are in the fifth part of the arc, and they really don't need these characters anymore until we get to the end of the story. So they have this little bit here where Dukat goes and tries to read the Costamogen by himself. Fire comes out. He's blinded, and Wynn kicks him out. And so Wynn is going to continue to study the book, going to continue to figure out her role in the Paw Wraith's plans, sends away Dukat, tells him, you can come back when your blindness has been cured. And so there's going to be a time lag. So now they can move forward and they can keep telling us the rest of the story and kind of put this bit on hold until they need it again.
Yeah, I thought it was smart, and it works well. And it fits the characters, you know, the greediness of Dukat, and also showing you just the vindictive, hateful nature of Wynn even more, how she's just kind of reveling in Dukat's pain, obviously discovering who he was.
And she's having fun.
Is. Yeah, she is, right? Having a good time. She is enjoying being the villain at this point.
And I don't even know if it's purely because it's Gul Dukat, and or it's just like she's becoming more caught up in being a servant of the Paw Wraiths, or what's going on.
I think it's that she's becoming who she's always really been and just tried to hide. And honestly, yeah. Wynn's just been a witch with a capital B, you know, and
keeping our clean tag here.
Exactly. Good job. And I think, and I don't mean that in derogatory sense. I mean, she just has been somebody who has been so pent up and desirous of power. And finally, she's starting to get it. And in fact, now she's in a position of power over somebody who she immensely hates, which is Gul Dukat. Right. She, yes, is enjoying
and someone that. Who is accustomed to being the one with all the power.
Exactly. So yeah. It is a great story line point here. And I think they do a great job of being able to sideline it till they need it. And, you know, I have no problems with them doing that because there are so many irons in the fire right now. They need to be able to focus on all the other things they're trying to wrap up.
All right. Well, we've run up almost to an hour here now, Matthew. So any final thoughts on When It Rains?
I just really like this episode. Watching it again, I was struck by all the character moments and really enjoying the way the characters were interacting. Kira and Odo, I think, were great. Kira, Odo, and Garrick were fantastic. Kira and Damar working together in their interaction. The small moments between Ross and Sisko I thought were funny because they were hanging out the whole episode together, you know, and right. Just kind of like bumming around the station, going from yeah. Klingon party to Klingon party.
They really were, yeah. Right? Like, what job were they doing? After they had that staff meeting at the beginning, yeah. They were just kind of hanging loose the whole episode.
Exactly. It was funny. you know, and of course, Miles and Julian and their interaction there with Quark, his little scene there with the coffee. Priceless, you know, how he's like, you're not gonna tell Odo about this, and Miles is like,
right,
it'll be our little secret, okay, just give me the coffee. You know, so there's so much of that in this episode, and I think it's so good, and what we talked about, that what they're setting up is great, and how they're setting it up, and the revelations that come. I mean, huge revelation about Odo and Section 31 and everything, and the way they're kind of tying in all these things from the series, you know, together and just kind of weaving them into this tapestry. You're really yeah. watching it happen in this episode. So it is fantastic.
Well, that is When It Rains. Next time we return to our look at the final chapter, we'll be talking about Tacking Into the Wind, where Gowron carries out his plan and his reckless attacks. And also we'll get to see Kira continuing to work with Damar as they're going to try to steal a Breen weapon to help out the war effort. So we'll be moving into that. And that'll be next month. As we're doing here, we're doing one of these, then we're doing three regular episodes of The Orb, and then we're coming back to the final chapter again. So tune in for that. But the final chapter isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
With the Slushoverse, a lot of people are wondering, is JJ going to stick Slusho into Star Wars?
Earl Grey.
It's like Leroy Jenkins, you know, he comes running in.
Sir, there's another starship entering the zone. It's the Enterprise!
The Enterprise!
The Orb.
But here's the thing, they put themselves in a box with Dax. It's such a cool sci-fi concept to say that the symbiont is the 300-year-old slug and the outer host body, you know, they're mixed together. And that the host changes from
the Ready Room.
Because, I mean, what's the alternative if you're not going to do what Chris just suggested? I mean, what's he going to do? Get down on his knees and say, oh, emissary, I'm with you now? I mean, right, that's right. Not really going to work either, right?
So allow me to ride my flaming chariot back to Starfleet.
To the journey!
I am genuinely excited for this week's episode because we are doing a commentary on Threshold. Yes, you heard that right. Threshold, the infamous episode that everybody loves to hate, but I love to love it.
Warp 5.
But the fact that they had been in so many other shows before, that they literally were pulling footage from Voyager to help flesh out that episode, I think it's sort of like it's an Easter egg and it's a theme, and it's also literally pulling out of another show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I feel like he always had the sense that the younger generation had a much clearer sense of what the future was going to be like than sort of the previous one.
Melodic Treks.
And his theme come on, and I just thought brilliantly tied in with the original series, because these were the original series characters, but it was giving a movie feel, and he just did a brilliant job on his composition.
Continuing mission.
We have had long discussions in the office about how we can get an appropriate chair sitting simulator into the game. Unfortunately, that's such a specific system that would really only be used by Riker.
Literary Treks.
And then she leads him back to her place and says, "Welcome back to my place. It's a good place to be together." And Kirk says, "Together is good."
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, BlackBerry, Swell, Spreaker. We're on SoundCloud as well. We're everywhere. We are, actually, Matthew, we are the Von Armstrong of Star Trek podcasting, because in this episode we just talked about today, Von Armstrong played a Cardassian, and that was his 13th character in Star Trek.
That is awesome. I just want us to be the Jeffrey Combs of Star Trek podcasting, so we still have a way to go, Chris.
All right. All right. So, but yeah, check out all these shows. Just look up Trek.fm or the name of the show you want to listen to, and you'll find us there, and you can stream from our website, and you can also grab the RSS link and drop that into your third-party application. We'd also like to take a moment to thank Apple, speaking of the iTunes Store, for making us the featured This Week On network in the store this week. We're right there on the main page in the podcast section, This Week On Trek FM. This is something that Apple does each week for different networks. And we have all 16 of our shows featured right there. So if you're finding the orb for the very first time as a result of that, welcome. We're really glad that you found us. We hope you'll stick with us. And also, we hope that you'll check out all the other shows on the network, because we cover every series in depth, just like we did DS9 today. And we have other shows where we discuss the series and the characters, and we interview creators and authors and writers and directors, all sorts of people. And we also talk about music and books and comics and other creative and even science. So we've got something for everyone here on the network. And huge thanks to Apple for giving us this recognition. And thank you to everyone listening every week, because it's thanks to you that Apple took notice of us in the first place. So thank you for helping us grow our network and talk about Star Trek every single week. Now, Matthew, we mentioned at the beginning of the show that you've completed your mission. A lot of our listeners have been asking me, when is Matthew coming back? Where is Matthew? I didn't want to blow your cover. Tell everyone what you've been doing.
Well, I had to create this brand new studio here in the Northwest. I actually just moved from Dallas up to Tacoma, Washington, and so that's what I've been up to. It was a long trek. Had to drive from Dallas to Tacoma.
Now, you haven't been driving for the entire month, though.
No, right. Not at all. But I had to come up here, find a place, all that kind of stuff. So it went well, had a great time. My best friend actually drove up here with me. We had a lot of fun before he left. We went and visited Seattle and had a great time down there. So very excited to be here. It's been great. I love it so far. And really enjoying the new office, which houses what we would like to affectionately know as the palatial Trek FM studios here. It's headquartered in the Northwest, as you are headquartered there in Tokyo, so you're holding down the Pacific branch.
That's
we're
right.
On either side of the Pacific. We're like That's bookends.
Right. We're bookending the giant pond.
Exactly.
That's yeah, right. I like the studio there, Matthew. I just want to warn you. I see that lamp on the floor back there. That could be a changeling. Just be on guard, all right?
Okay. I'm watching that like a hawk.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're back, Matthew, and I'm also glad that you're now in the Pacific time zone, because that extra 2 hours makes it a whole lot easier for you and me to coordinate with each other.
It sure does.
It definitely does. All right. Well, if you'd like to share your thoughts on today's show, on When It Rains or the final chapter of DS9 or anything about DS9, you can reach us in a variety of ways. You can go to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there that comes to both Matthew and me by email. You can also find us on Twitter under username trekfm. Facebook.com/trekfm is where you'll find us on Facebook. Google Plus, we have a community. Just search G Plus communities for that. We also have forums at trek.fm/forums. And you can even send us a voicemail through our website. If you look in the left sidebar on the show page, you'll see a widget for that. All right, Matthew, when you're not taking in all the fresh air of Tacoma, Washington, and getting used to your new digs, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. We also do a show called Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and comics of Star Trek, and we've been slowly making our way through the Deep Space Nine relaunch, so you can find those episodes. And some of the first episodes we did, we're talking about Avatar, parts 1 and 2 there for the Deep Space Nine Season 8, quote-unquote, relaunch there. And so you can also find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not enjoying your power and really in getting into reading ancient dark texts like the Costa Mogen, where can we find you?
Well, you know, I learned something. When you do that, you should always wear dark glasses. That way the beams of fire cannot get into your eyes.
Exactly. Make sure they're polarized.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/CBrianJones, and I have my website at cbrianjones.com. I do a lot of other shows on the network besides doing Literary Treks with you, Matthew. I do Warp 5, I do Matterstream, Continuing Mission, The Ready Room with other hosts from all around the network. And there's also a Hyper Channel, which is a daily show where I bring you Star Trek news every day. So check out those if you'd like to hear some more of my thoughts on Star Trek. There are two more things I'd like to tell you about before we close here real quick. One of them is a way that you can win Star Trek prizes. This is a new promotion that we're running from today through the end of July. And reviews are very important to us here at Trek FM. Not only because we love hearing from you and knowing what you think about the shows, but also having more reviews helps our content bubble up in iTunes so that other Star Trek fans who don't know about us, which is pretty much every Star Trek fan, not many people know we exist yet, they can find our shows more easily. So we would love to have your help in growing the network, but we want to give you some incentive to do that as well, because we understand that you may want to review us, but you know, you're listening to the show while you're jogging or cooking or driving, or you're at the office and you can't actually leave a review at that time. If you go over to iTunes and or Stitcher and leave us a review, each review you leave will get you an entry into a drawing for some great prizes. You can win a season of Star Trek on Blu-ray or DVD, a season of your choice. Some Star Trek books of your choice as well. An official Starship Collection ship from Japan with the Japanese magazine. That's a great collectible. And also a full collection of our alien artwork badges. We may add other prizes along the way, so keep tabs on us through social media and on our website, and listen to the shows as well, and we'll let you know about that. Winners will be drawn at random from all entries received before midnight Pacific time on July 31st, and all you need to do to enter is to leave us a review. Now, a star rating alone won't work, because we have no way of knowing who left a star rating, so it does need to be a written review. Again, you can only review each show once, of course, but you can review multiple shows if you listen to different Trek FM shows, and you can also review us on both iTunes and Stitcher, and each one of those will get you an entry in the drawing. Now, there are two steps to entering. The first is to leave the review on iTunes and or Stitcher, and the second is to visit trek.fm/review and complete the form that you see there. You'll be asked for some basic information about you, and which shows you reviewed and where you left the reviews. And that way we can match those up to you. We know how to contact you if you win. And we can tell you thank you for leaving us a review. So it's very simple. Again, that's trek.fm/review. And we thank you in advance for your support and helping us grow the network. And we look forward to hearing from you and getting some prizes out to you as well. Lastly, I would like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. They are the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. They have over 150,000 books waiting for you right now, and they add hundreds of new books every single week. And as a Trek FM listener, we have a special offer for you. You can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. All you need to do is to go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. Choose whatever book you want. It could be one of the great Star Trek books like Prime Directive or Federation, or a non-Star Trek book. It doesn't matter. Choose whatever you like. And if at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose because you get to keep that book. But by trying Audible, you're really helping us out here at The Orb to keep the show coming to you every week. Because if just one of you tries Audible, the money we receive from them almost covers the cost of hosting and distributing The Orb for one entire month. So support us by trying out Audible, and you'll be getting some great books, great prices, and great selection in exchange. And if you love podcasts, you're going to love them for sure. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. Another place that you should visit is TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. If you love Star Trek and you want to really be challenged, you need to go to fm.trekfan.org and check out all the qualifications and other things they have going on there. They have a program called Starfleet Academy, which I've told you about in the past, where they will send you a free novel, and you just review the novel, pass it on to a friend to read, and just send them the novel. They're compiling Star Trek novel reviews there, but that's not all they do. They have many other things there as well, like flight operations, engineering, and communications qualifications. In fact, Samuel Covings of Livonia, Michigan, he just got his technician license, and Teresa Watkins of Atlanta, she just got her flight operations challenge taken care of a couple of weeks ago thanks to TrekFan. And it's absolutely free. You just go there and sign up. I mean, it's just a fantastic idea for, I don't even want to call it a fan club. It's a fan club, but it's so much more. Go check it out today and put your love of Star Trek into action at fm.trekfan.org. And that's a special URL, by the way, that lets them know that you heard about it here on the network. So be sure to use that URL, fm.trekfan.org. And we really thank them for supporting the show as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.